Well, it is my pleasure to be with you as well. You met Holly from Covenant Pines just a few minutes ago. Holly and I work together. We are the two of the staff that live in the Twin Cities, even though our camp property is a couple hours away. And so I know not everyone is familiar with Covenant Pines Ministries, where I serve. And so I thought just we'd show a couple slides here. This first one here, this is our mission statement, because I think it's important for you as new city and as new individuals to know what is the mission of Covenant Pines. And our mission is to encourage campers to take a next step in Christian faith. We recognize that campers come from a variety of different faith developments, and we just want them to take that next step. If that's to be more open to understanding and reading scripture, then that's cool. If that's to explore what it means to be a follower of Christ, then that's a next step. If it's somebody to take a next step to say, you know what, maybe God's calling me into full-time ministry, that's a next step. And so really wanting to have a conversation with campers about what's that next step that God's calling you to. But then if the next slide here, what we describe ourselves as a family of ministries. Holly talks specifically about the Bible camp. But we use the language or the phrase that we're one ministry, we own two properties, and we have four ministry centers. And so Covenant Pines Ministry is the parent organization. That's where I serve as executive director. We own two properties. One is in Grand Marais, Minnesota, up the North Shore at the edge of the Boundary Waters, called Adventurous Christians. And then what Holly was talking about is the Covenant Pines Bible Camp, as well as Silver Beach Family Camp, which are both located in McGregor, Minnesota. And then Holly also, what she doesn't talk about is that she is our offsite ministry director. So she handles and runs different Covenant Pines Ministries events that take place in the Twin Cities. And whether that's our golf tournament or our parents' coffee, but different activities that take place in the Twin Cities. So, and as she alluded to, one of the significant things we have this upcoming summer is the new worship center. And so this is the artistic rendering. This makes it look pretty. We use this for fundraising, and it's like, this looks cool. Very different than our existing A-frame chapel, which was built in 1957. And so just kind of walking into this, that's where it's set. You can see it's mostly, the outside is all shelled in. We're actually hoping to have do a construction punch list walkthrough in 2 weeks. And so we're getting really close. I ordered 450 chairs a week ago. And so this is kind of in the existing parking lot. This is the inside of the worship space, looking out to the commons area outside that. The next one here is, again, trying to highlight, it's similar, but it is a worship space. So sound and lights and all that fun stuff. Next one here, you saw this in the video. This is kind of a commons area. In essence, I use the language, we built a church without a gym or a kitchen. And so this is our fellowship, Narthex gathering community space, and you saw the worship space kind of behind the fireplace, our offices and bathrooms, and the next one here. And this is one of the things that we did in putting this together is that we have roughly 300 beds at camp, but at Silver Beach, we look at, well, how would we expand and grow Silver Beach in the future? And so one of the things when we built a new worship space, we wanted to have flexibility. So inside that actual gathering space, we can seat 300 in there, but then opening up these doors and flowing out into the commons area, we can set another 150 people. So this building would allow for all of our current campers and any future growth that we have to fully utilize our capacity. The next one here, this is just for those of you who have been to camp and are wondering, where is it? This is kind of the view as if you were standing in front of the retreat center or on the old dining hall area. The volleyball court's to your right and the Bald Eagle Lodge is to your left. So I think that's the last one, I think. Yep, so, but I also said, so one of the things I do is I serve as executive director of Covenant Pines. I always think it's interesting that when a guest speaker comes in, you get to know who they are a little bit. So this is my family. I'm married. I've got three kids. My daughter loves the 0.5s pictures, so 0.5 selfies. So this is what we did at Christmas time. My oldest son and his fiance live in Portland, Maine. Used to live in Washington. Middle son lives in Chicago, and my daughter is at Hope College. And then my wife and I, and again, a little bit more about me. I love being outside, so a variety of different activities, whether it's running, paddleboarding, that's my fun place. And then I did, a year and a half ago, I did about half of the Superior Hiking Trail, kind of as a solo hiking trip. So that's just kind of, that's who I am. And again, just to give you some perspective, there's some familiar faces, but a lot of people I don't know yet. So, What we're going to talk about this morning is we're going to go into a little bit of what it means to be community and what it means to build relationships. And we're going to start by reading the first couple of verses out of the book of Ruth. And I'm going to invite Mateo to come on up. Mateo is one of our staff members. Mateo and Kira were on summer staff this last summer. And unbeknownst to him, during the greeting time, I said, hey, you want to help me out? So this is on the fly, which often happens at camp. But Mateo, it's going to be on the screen as well. But the first 18 verses of Ruth chapter 1.
And I will say, I'm not a biblical scholar, so if I mispronounce anything, please forgive me. So this is verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud, and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. You did a great job on that, Mateo. Let me begin us with a word of prayer. God, I give you thanks for your goodness, for the opportunity that we, Holly and I, both have a chance to be here to talk about Covenant Pines, talk about the ministry that you're doing there, the way that you're changing lives. But God, also, as we explore Scripture, as we look into the book of Ruth and look into lessons that we can pull from there. So God, we're confident that you are with us. We ask that you keep us attuned and keep us aware to listen to your voice. We pray all this in your name. Amen. So I'm not sure if you've moved or changed schools a lot. And again, when you were younger, I had that opportunity. Our family, my dad wasn't in the military, but we changed schools all the time. I went to a school for kindergarten first, one for second, third, one for fourth, one for fifth, one for sixth, one for seventh, eighth, and then 10th, 11th, and 12th. So it was constantly moving into new communities, moving into new places, and trying to build relationships. And I've been thinking a lot about that aspect of what it means to build relationships, what it means to develop community. As I mentioned, my son this fall, or during the end of the summer, moved from, after spending 6 years in Spokane, Washington, moved to Portland, Maine with his fiance to start grad school. So they're trying to figure out what does it mean to, how do we make friends here? Where do we get connected? My daughter, who's a sophomore in college, she's the co-chair of her sorority's Rush activities, which is in the middle of that right now. So it's all about sisterhood and about finding a place to belong. And so this aspect of how we reach outside of the people we already know and develop new friendships and new relationships are something that I've been, it's been significant in my world the last couple months. And And I've just had the thought in coming here saying, you know what, New City is also going through this time of renewal as you've had a transition in pastor with Tim coming, and just this sense of what it means to have new people. I just, not to put Doug on the spot, but met Doug for the first time this morning. He's a first-time visitor. And so having people come in and out of New City and kind of saying, like, what do we do? How do we develop those relationships? And so part of that was just kind of thinking back of imagery and what does it look like? Or and you often see bridges as kind of that visual picture of what it means to have a connecting, because bridges, they span, whether it's spanning water or spanning land, it's that connecting point from one to the other. And so one of the images I found is actually this one here. This is in California. This is the Bridge to Nowhere. And actually, Jamie and I were talking. He saw the PowerPoint, and he's like, hey, is that the Bridge to Nowhere? I think I've bungee jumped off that. And that's it. This was built in the San Gabriel Mountains of California in 1936. And shortly after it was built, a landslide or a flood came in, totally changed the landscape around it. So right now, the closest road to this is 5 miles away. And so the amount of expenditure to actually make a new road connecting it, they just said, let's abandon it. So this is literally a bridge to nowhere. There's no access point to it, so it's a popular destination for bungee jumpers, for hiking and climbing, stuff like that. But then I thought, maybe there's a different bridge or a different type of bridge that may be a better illustration. Then we went to this one. In 2005, my family, my kids were young, we moved to New Hampshire and spent 10 years living in Swansea, New Hampshire. And little did we know that there are 50 covered bridges in the state of New Hampshire. Four of them were in our small little town. So these are the four bridges, the Thompson, the Crescent, I can't remember the name of them, but they became part of our daily life, because whether we were driving to town, whether we were going grocery shopping, whether we were going to school or church, we went through three of these four covered bridges on a consistent and a regular basis. And it was interesting to get used to it, not quite like driving on Cedar Avenue Bridge or, you know, 35W Bridge, but still became very, very significant in our little world. But we're going to come back to these covered bridges, but I want to now jump to where we were with the verses that Mateo read out of Ruth. And again, we're not going to go back and reread them, but let me just summarize them a little bit. Because in the book of Ruth, you have this small little book. Ruth is the smallest book of the Old Testament. It's set right between kind of this historical narratives of Joshua, Judges, of 1 and 2 Samuel, the transition from Judges into the, or from the period of, yeah, from Judges into Kings. And then there's this little book called Ruth about a Moabite woman that almost serves as kind of a pause or a comma in that narrative story. And we're not going to get far into the story. Again, Mateo read the first 18 verses. It's only four chapters long. But I want to go back and just summarize what happens and what is experienced by Ruth in those first couple of chapters. And so again, we begin with this Israelite man, and he's moving from Bethlehem to Moab. And we learned in reading this, it's approximately 50 miles. So again, what's some geographically, how does that fit out from us here? This is as if you were going to walk the 5 to 7 miles, or 5 to 7 days that it would take you to walk to Welch. If you're going down skiing down at Welch Village, that's about 50 miles from, according to Google, from here to there. Again, takes 5 to 7 days, depending on how long it is. And as a result of a famine, Elimelech is moving his whole family, and they're picking up their Naomi, their two sons. And verse 2 says that they settled in Moab. So this is not a vacation. This is not just a journey. This is a full relocation that they're going to experience. And then after verse 2, those next three verses, you have all of this life transition that takes place. And at some point, you kind of feel a little empathy towards Naomi, because she's moves, her husband dies, her two kids get married, they both pass away, all within three verses. So it's move, death, married, death, and just this tragedy. And we don't know the exact time frame, except that we say that there are 10 years that pass between their son's marriage and their death. And so now you have Naomi, this woman living in a foreign land. She has two daughter-in-laws, and she hears that back home that the famine has ended. And so she begins to make plans to say, let's return home. Let's go back to Judah. And so she decides to go back there, and somewhere along the road, she says, you know what, women, daughter-in-laws, why don't you stay here? Stay with your family. And so back and forth, as Mateo read, and One goes back, but the other one sticks with Ruth, or sticks with Naomi, and that's Ruth. Let me read these verses from verses 16 and 17. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me and be it ever so severely, even if death separates us." I think we're going to stop here, but I think that these verses that and words that Ruth is telling Naomi give us a wonderful backdrop of what it means to enter into community, what it means to be a bridge builder into new relationships. When she says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." She doesn't necessarily know the customs or the culture of Judah. Maybe she picked up some in her marriage, but they're not what she grew up with. And yet she's declaring that she will invest and care for those that she doesn't know about as she follows Naomi back. And so taking that kind of backdrop of the story of Ruth and Naomi, and then looking at this bridge building concept, I want us to go back and look at some of those covered bridges of New Hampshire. This particular bridge, this is a slate bridge. It's one, again, that my family drove through. And what we're going to try to do is tease some lessons out of this, of what this bridge represents as we're looking at building bridges. So one of the first things you notice on the far right there, you've got a stop sign, you've got these white pillars that are trying to funnel you into the bridge. And I think that what this, and this is a feature that every covered bridge that I've seen has that stop sign in front of it, partly because they're all two-lane roads coming towards it, but then it's single, the bridge itself is single lane. And so I think one of the lessons that we can learn from this bridge building or developing community is to be intentional. The stop sign says that you have to be intentional to enter into that bridge. You can't just willy-nilly say, "Hey, I'm going to fly through here." No, there's got to be some intentionality of stopping. And I think when we enter into relationships and demonstrate God's love to others, we as well need to be intentional. I can think back to the times in my life where I have had conversations with people, and all of a sudden it's not been really focused, it hasn't been intentional, and then afterwards I'm like, man, I wish I would have learned more about them. I wish I would have invested more. I wish I would have slowed down and stopped talking and been more of a receiver of that communication. And again, that's kind of as we strive to build bridges, that's what we need to do. We need to be that intentionality. And just tying that into Covenant Pines, this is something that we do on a regular basis. I mean, that development and that intentional focus on how we build community, that happens right away. Again, Kira and Mateo can attest to the amount of time that we talk with our staff about during these first couple hours. We want you to develop relationships. We want you to get to know your campers' names. We want to have this idea of what it means to be a cabin group. And that doesn't necessarily happen just by accident. It happens with intentionality. So as new people come into new city, you need to be intentional to step out and to greet people and to invest in who they are, understand who they are as well. Likewise, Ruth was intentional, as intentional as she could be, when she said, "Your people will become my people." This is not flippant. This is not something that she's just going to casually do. She's living into, "Your people will become my people." The second lesson that we can learn from covered bridges is to communicate clearly. Again, as I said, what happens if two cars arrive at the opposite side? This two-lane or two-way roads coming into a one-lane bridge or a one-way bridge. And basically what you typically do is you have your finger on your lights and you flash your brights at it, and that allows and communicates that, hey, you go first, and you just kind of wait for that person. What happens sometimes, unfortunately, is that people blow through that stop sign, or they don't slow down, they lose their intentionality, and all of a sudden now there are two cars in the middle of the bridge. Those bridges weren't built to have cars pass. And so you have this conflict that takes place, and I've seen cars try to squeeze past each other without scraping the sides. And one of the things that this brought to mind to me when I think about the relational standpoint, for the past 10 plus years, I've been involved in coaching and consulting with international camps and camp leaders. And one of the things that I learned very quickly, that when we talk about camp in the U.S., it typically means the place. Where's your camp? It's where that camp is located. But internationally, many cultures refer to camp. It's not where, but it's what. It's the activities. It's what takes place in camp because they don't own properties. And so the place moves around, but what they do. And even I've learned at some point that when we talk about camp, camp doesn't bring up the images of fun and excitement and joy that we often think about Covenant Pines, what you saw reflected on those pictures, but really it brings people back to a place of sadness. It brings to a refugee camp, to an immigrant compound, to something that is very different. And so needing to understand when we're talking about camp, what does it mean to develop a common language? I mean, if I threw some words out to you that we often use inside Christianity, inside the big C church that says, you know, I'm born again, I'm an evangelical, I'm a Christian, I'm a follower of Jesus, I attend a church plant, I attend a covenant church. What do those mean? And I'm wondering, we don't have time this morning, but it'd be an interesting conversation to say, let's throw some of those words around here and have a discussion. What does it mean to say I'm born again? What does it mean to say I attend a covenant church? And to see if we have the same understanding or the same knowledge. And so again, looking at building community, looking at building bridges, we need to develop a shared understanding of the words that we are using. Go back to the slate bridge. One of the other things, the next thing to do is to proceed cautiously. Again, it's why there's a stop sign. That's why you develop that language of flashing your lights so you know. And part of that is that it's the same way when we're trying to develop relationships and we're trying to build community. We need to proceed cautiously into some of those conversations. Sometimes it's if we come in and we're just charging ahead, that's going to overwhelm and create distance and create confusion, and people aren't going to want to have relationships with us. We need to have a posture and proceed closely of openness. There's an interesting book written called Pilgrim to Servanthood, Dr. Duane Elmer, and he suggests that within the first 1 to 4 seconds of meeting somebody, that we've made a decision if we want to enter into a relationship with them. And so I've been up here for more than 4 seconds. So you have already formed some judgments, some perceptions as, hey, is Dave somebody I want to enter into? And some of you are saying, no, he's too loud, he's too whatever, and others are going to be like, well, let's just get to know him a little bit. And I think that's an important posture for us to have, is just to proceed cautiously. One of my college roommates presented himself as super arrogant, and that or confident, depending on your perspective. And again, we spent 4 years running track together, you know, hours every day on the track with him. And we were able to get past that outside perspective. So he's a really good guy. I mean, the point that we developed a good friendship, he was a groomsman in our wedding, but yet it was that ability to stay and to proceed cautiously and slowly with him that allowed me to get beyond the exterior that we present, that 1 to 4 seconds, to say, okay, yeah, there is a depth that I want to pursue here, a depth of relationships. Get my pages here correctly. Let's go to this next one. When you're entering into relationships, one of the things to worry about is to expect disruptions. One of the things we learned about covered bridges in being there is that most of these bridges were built in the 1800s. They didn't have the weight restrictions that vehicles today have. They didn't have the size. A horse and buggy is very different than a U-Haul truck. Or even an Amazon van. And so one of the things that would often happen is that these bridges would be shut down. They're shut down for maintenance, they're shut down for repairs, which if you think this is in the mountains of New Hampshire, all of a sudden the main road that you were trying to get across is now closed. That created havoc on us in trying to get from where we were going, again, whether it's a church or not. One of the things, when we've moved from Minnesota to New Hampshire, the housing market was tight in 2005, and we couldn't find a house that we liked, so we decided to build. And so we built a house, and we had to rent in a neighboring town because the house wasn't ready yet. And so then, moving back and forth, all of a sudden, now the bridge is closed. This bridge, again, that we went through on a regular basis, when it was closed for maintenance, not knowing the shortcuts or some of the back roads, all of a sudden, I added a half hour to my drive time to get from work back to the rental house, or when I was beginning to move trailers of stuff from the rental house into our new house and bridges were closed. And all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, this is a huge disruption that I was not prepared for. When we think about relationships, when we think about building those relationships, we know they're messy. They're difficult. Sometimes there's things that pop up that create issues and create distractions. One of the things that, again, moving, they don't allow trailers to go through those because of the weight restrictions. There are times that I have realized that how many times do I enter into a relationship that I'm bringing my trailer of stuff with me? I'm bringing my experience, my thing, that derail the opportunity to develop a relationship and to move into a further depth or a further conversation. And so I need to leave my trailer of stuff back home so I can step in and be authentically who I am. The last little lesson that we can learn from here is to remain faithful. This is an anomaly of a picture of a covered bridge. Almost all the bridges that I know, when you approach them, they have an angled approach. You can't see all the way through. You're coming up, whether it's because the roads are going like this, because there's not a straight road in New Hampshire. But this one, you can actually see through, and I love that image, because what it represents is that the bridge is only part of the journey. It's only part of building relationships and developing community. You're on one side and you want to get to the other side. So when we're entering into these relationships and we're dealing with all of the, sometimes the messiness and the fun of developing, and to remain faithful to move through those opportunities so that you can develop authentic relationships. And so that's the lesson that I learned from this bridge as well. One of the fun things when we go back to the story of Ruth is that, let me find my page here. Going back to the story of Ruth. Before we go there, let's go to this one here. This is just a summary of the five points that we have here. Be intentional, communicate clearly, proceed cautiously, expect disruptions, and to remain faithful. These are the keys to build bridges with people that we don't know, which hopefully will soon fill New City. As you begin to develop relationships and community with people who stop in. Returning to the story of Ruth, the book closes with the lineage of descendants leading up to David. Included in Ruth's is Ruth's son Obed, the grandfather of King David. And we know from kind of often going back into the Christmas story and reading from Matthew 1, the lineage that leads up to Jesus' birth. So we have Ruth, this Moabite widow, who declared, "Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your community my people, or your God my God." Her investment into new communities and building of relationships is included in the lineage of Jesus. And I'm just so thankful for her faithfulness, that she was willing to, again, to reach out, to live into these different lessons of how to build relationships and expand community. As we close today, I want to go to some few verses from Colossians, and may they guide our actions and our attitudes towards bridge building, and kind of receive this as a closing prayer, something that frames our attitude. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Amen.